Hi, everybody, and welcome to the first Social Echoes podcast, the True Voice Media interview series. And today, our first guest, very happy to have Mr. Delane Rouse. And he is a photographer based in Washington, D.C. And he's been all over the country. He owns three separate photography studios. He has Rouse Photography Group, which is in D.C., D.C. Corporate Headshots, also in D.C. And then in our own backyard, we have Contrast Photography, and that's in the city of Philadelphia. Delane, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm good. It's a great day. Great weather down here in DC. How are you doing today?
Absolutely. Beautiful day in the suburbs of Philadelphia as well. Facebook just acquired Instagram not very long ago for what we thought was $1 billion, but after all the paperwork went down, they settled for less than three quarters of $1 billion. They settled, but I wish I could settle for that much money.
Yeah, me too.
Do you believe that it was wise still for Instagram to shack up with Facebook?
So, for $750 million, it'd be hard for me not to shack up with anybody. But seriously, I do think it was wise for them to hook, be picked up by Facebook. Simply because, I mean, Instagram is like 2 years old or so. They'd only been around, I think it was 551 days. They didn't have a cent of revenue, and they had like 12 employees, So I'm sure they understand the whole deal with the Facebook stock dropping. So they don't really have as much available cash as they had before. So I'm sure they understand that. So even at $750 million, that's a tremendous return on their investment. So absolutely, I definitely think it's a great deal.
Yeah, I think that a lot of people are more concerned perhaps with the Facebook IPO more so than the Instagram. So I'm in your boat. I think Instagram is going to be just fine, and I like the way that Facebook has kind of left them alone, and you end up seeing Instagram just releasing Instagram 3.0 with their photo maps and different things like that. They're going to be, hopefully, as long as Facebook kind of stays out of their own way, they're going to be just A-okay.
Absolutely. I think, one of the big things is exactly what you're saying, is that Facebook needed to leave them alone. I mean, people complain about the Facebook app, about how slow it is on the iOS. And so by not bringing it in and killing it, because Facebook had a reputation for purchasing, making acquisitions and killing them. By not bringing them in and killing them, I think they've done the right thing. Just leave it be, let it grow. Even learn from the mobile experience that Instagram provides, and get part of the Instagram part of their customer base. They needed that as well. They didn't really need that. I mean, but it's a good solid customer base.
Yeah, it's a good community to have. I'm the second half of the community. I'm the Android-based community. So when Instagram finally was released on Android, I was thrilled because having seen a lot of my friends use it and having already been familiar with it on iPhone, iPad, Mashable, I was very excited to get it. So,
And then the final thing with that is Instagram was cool. It was
oh
really
yeah.
cool. So they picked up part of that cool factor,
Certainly.
by picking up Instagram.
So before we get into another Instagram question, Delane, how did you get started in photography? Where did that passion come about?
When I was in like late middle school and early high school, I think like 8th, 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, I would always go to a summer camp. It's called Summer Ventures at East Carolina University in Greenville, North Carolina. You take a science class in the morning, a math class in the afternoon, and then you did like a fun class. Every year, my fun class was photography. It was black and white back then, it was film. You shoot pictures around campus, your fellow campmates and stuff, and you develop them. And then I wouldn't see another, black and white picture for a year until I came back to camp. But that's what sparked the original interest. Went off to college, and I always thought of photography as a hobby. I had a professor in my junior year that did a lot of work with microscopes, eventually he hired me to assist him, like prepping the microscopes and cleaning up and stuff. And we had a class where, well, he taught a class where kids came in and they took pictures of these crystal structures, shot slides, and they took these pictures, and then a week later the slides came back. And I remember looking at that slide, holding it up to the light and going, wow, this is cool. Yeah. After that, I started working more and more with cameras. He would let me use the cameras anytime I needed them. I asked my mom for a camera 1 year for Christmas. My next year, my senior year for Christmas, she got me the one that we used in the lab, and kind of the rest was history. I'm an engineer by background and by degree.
Right.
So, like, for me, a lot of photography is technical. I don't consider myself an artist. Never really wanted to be an artist, but at the end of the day, I do like pretty pictures. So when I got my first job out of college, I spent all my spare time and all my spare money taking pictures. I even got a part-time job at Ritz Camera.
Yeah.
So that I could get 40% off and I could get equipment discounts and meet with the Nikon reps and all kinds of stuff like that. And eventually I had an opportunity to leave corporate America and start a studio in Philadelphia. And that's when myself and my business partner, Todd Baudis, started a studio in Philadelphia.
That's wonderful. And you know, I'd seen that on your LinkedIn profile that you had studied engineering, and I thought, well, that must have been something must have happened. There must have been some kind of conversion. So to hear that story is pretty cool.
Yeah, one of those things where I was just interested in it, but didn't know any professional photographers. I'm from a small hometown.
Yeah,
you know, one paper. I think there was one staff photographer. You know, everybody had a camera, so to me, it felt like a hobby at the time. And it is a hobby for, you know, millions and billions of people. But eventually I saw, like, wow, you can make money. You can make a living doing this. I'm going to try it.
Yeah. So in the same way that you started talking about photography, everybody now has these devices in their pockets that take these pretty stellar 8-megapixel photos. Do you remember the first time you saw a mobile photo?
First time I saw a mobile photo. Not a mobile photo, but I remember in college, one of my professors was kind of one of these cutting edge Macintosh guys. Like, he kind of went against the grain at the time because he was really big into Macintosh and using it in a science environment. And I remember one of his projects, he purchased like an Apple, I don't know if it wasn't Coolpix, because that's a Nikon camera, but it was a digital camera.
Right.
And I imagine it was probably, maybe it was 640 pixels by 480, so that's like 1 megapixel or so. Okay. But I remember that camera and going, wow, this thing is really cool. And I don't know, that thing probably had to be $5,000 at the time,
right?
For a 1-megapixel camera. I don't even know what the connection was. Maybe it even shot to like a floppy disk or something. It wasn't a floppy disk, but you know, like a small disk.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first like digital picture that I remember. You know, before that, you would take a picture, you would shoot it, and then you would scan it because scanners were out before flatbed scanners were available.
Right.
But that would be the first digital picture I remember, probably 1993, 94, around that time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just the portability of these photos and the visibility of everything, the social aspect of that is incredible because obviously as humans, we are able to interpret visually much quicker than we could text or really anything else. So.
Right.
The rise of Instagram and different photo applications isn't all that surprising.
It's really not, because the saying, a picture is worth 1,000 words.
Yep.
So if a picture is worth 1,000 words, then people are talking a lot. So you're absolutely right. I mean, with social networks, I guess you didn't have to be a genius to know that this was coming. But I'm glad I'm a part of it. I'm glad I get to see it. You know, and, you know, I'm glad I remember those days before it was here. So I remember film and all that cool stuff. But the things that we're doing today with, you know, small cameras and, you know, huge megapixels, it's so cool. And I'm glad I'm part of it.
A very polarizing topic in the Instagram community: filters and effects. Do you think that they're being overused, or do you think that we're just kind of looking for something to nitpick at?
From my standpoint, I just think we're looking for something to nitpick at. Look, Instagram is it's a tool, and that's what it's based off of. It does some things really well. They're really simple, because the way I think what I read about Instagram is it was another piece of software, and then they went in and just stripped it all down and got rid of the other software, redesigned it, redeveloped it, and said, we're going to make this thing real simple. Pictures, filters, share, you know, like. People can like pictures and comment on them. So that's what they do, and they do it really, really well. I mean, to me, the filters are the best part. I mean, we've been able to shoot a picture and share it for a while now, but being able to apply those really cool filters and, you know, make things look miniature and pop colors and contrast and do stuff like that, that's what Instagram really is to me. It's so much fun when I go out and shoot some pictures of one of my daughters out on the playground and then pop a few colors, do something, and it's square, which is kind of cool that it's square.
Right.
Pop a few filters on it and then produce an outstanding picture that people go, wow, awesome.
Yeah, I know that you use it primarily for family and fun, but there's a lot of companies that are using it to tell their story online, kind of like refocus the brand in a way that is social. Have you seen any examples of companies that are doing that really well?
I have. So I'm a big sports nut. So, I mean, obviously the most major thing that's happened recently would be the Olympics.
Right.
So if you look at the Olympics, you take and I'm not a big fan of Ryan Seacrest.
Okay. But
I saw a graphic that said that Ryan Seacrest, he only put out two pictures that on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
1.47 million people saw him.
Yeah.
That's tremendous reach.
That's incredible reach.
That's tremendous reach. And you had, so the Olympics really took advantage of it. Well, the Olympics didn't, but the individual athletes, a lot of the individual athletes took tremendous advantage of it. Gabby Douglas had something like 150,000 followers on Instagram.
Yeah.
Usain Bolt had over 100,000. You know, there were... I saw another graphic that was talking about Instagram hashtags from the Olympics. There were like 650,000 hashtags of like hashtag Olympics.
Yep.
And or 200,000 that were hashtag London 2012. So the Olympics did a really good job. And then another really good one was Sports Illustrated. Had a buddy of mine, it's out on the West Coast. His name is Brad Mangin. M-A-N-G-I-N. Brad is a longtime sports photographer, and he just had a two-page spread. I think it was a two-page spread. I'd have to look back to see exactly how many pages it was. It was a spread in Sports Illustrated, the very beginning of the magazine. It's something he'd been working on, shooting Instagram photos from spring training up until, say, mid-season at the Major League Baseball level.
Okay.
And they ran those pictures, and they were phenomenal pictures, and like his creativity and his vision. And from what I understand, they're starting to do like a regular feature of Instagram photos. I think it's online, but they've got like an Instagram section in Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, that's pretty incredible. And I think that if you're still touching on the sports aspect, I think the NHL has done, aside from their overall social media campaign or prowess, I think they've done a spectacular job using Instagram during the playoffs in April through June. they actually had different banners in New York City and other urban centers. They had a Stanley Cup kind of suspended, and what the people were supposed to do was kind of put their hands above where their head would be and kind of, you know, have like a mock holding up, hoisting the cup. And then one of their buddies was supposed to then take a picture of them and have like a hashtag in that. And that then, you know, the NHL is able to then get a whole bunch of people commenting, liking, and really bringing people into their own story, which is fantastic. Because every kid, I grew up playing hockey. Right. Every kid wants to hoist their trophy in whatever sport they're in. You know, if you play football, you want to hoist up the Lombardi trophy. Basketball, you want to put up the NBA title.
Absolutely.
It's exactly like that. It's that community experience, and it's very visual, obviously. So that's what Instagram works beautifully with that.
I'm not sure about the date on this, but by the end of the season, all the Major League Baseball teams were going to be on Instagram. Obviously, with Sports Illustrated signing on, you know, Major League Baseball, NHL. I mean, you know, we got to know the sports world drives a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, of course, because sports are very – very communal. They're also very local. As much as they're a professional team, they are very local. I think that's actually one of the reasons why maybe some people really got into the Olympics. I know I did. But some people may not have gotten into the Olympics as much simply because while it's America, you have right. It's 5 hours away. So you might even be watching it 5 hours. You may already know the outcome. Twitter may have already spoiled it for you.
Right.
And your interest perhaps has waned, whereas in if you're watching, like, for example, if I'm watching a game here in Philadelphia that happens at 7 o'clock Eastern time, I'm not going to be spoiled by anybody. Absolutely. So how about some of your favorite tips or tricks, just kind of like in the photographer's mind, that you could use on mobile outside of adding and applying filters on Instagram?
This tip applies to, in my opinion, it applies to all photography. Well, all digital photography. Since most of us have already invested, we have phones and we have digital cameras. I tell people all the time, they ask me, how do I get better? How do I do this? How do I do that? I tell them, shoot. Just keep shooting. Shoot, shoot, shoot. Because you learn faster. You see what your mistakes are, and you learn from your mistakes. It's not like the old film days where you had to shoot a roll of 24 or 36 and then send it in, and then a week later you got your prints back, and then you couldn't remember, like, why is this picture out of focus? Or why is this picture underexposed or overexposed? You see the results immediately. So that's the key to me is, whatever you're doing, just keep doing it. Do more, 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 and learn from your mistakes.
That's great. It's a lot like writing. That's spot on.
Exactly. The more you do it, the better you'll get.
How about some of your favorite accounts on Instagram?
Well, Brad Mangin is really my favorite one. I look at his work. I look at his work a lot. And other than that, I look at like what's popular that day, and I just like to see different stuff. I just like variety, because a lot of, you know, my own stuff is just personal stuff, it's family stuff and things like that. I just like to see what other people are doing and what other people are thinking.
Right.
When people are traveling and going places, and you know, you see different, you don't. Because these are like just a lot of these are regular people that are in extraordinary locations. They're in Europe and South America. You get to see like everyday life, you know, through the eyes of a friend of yours or through the eyes of somebody you've never met and you'll never meet. But it's a lot of times it's everyday life.
Right.
So that's what I like to see, like what's popular, what other people are looking at.
You get to see the world of somebody else that you may never ever meet, and they take this beautiful, emotionally stirring picture.
Right.
And you get to interact with it. That's great.
Right. Now, don't get me wrong. A lot of the pictures are of, oh, I had dinner at, you know, Tony Luke's, or you know, it's a picture of a cheesesteak or it's a picture of, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
But at that time, that's what, that means something to that person, whatever it is. You know, just walking down the street or, and the other thing that's kind of cool is when it's an event and you get to see multiple pictures from one event from many, many, many different angles from many different cameras and many different people.
Right.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So Delane, where can we find you and your company on social networking?
Oh, you can find me. You can find me on Facebook, my DC corporate headshots. So it's facebook.com/DC corporate headshots, LinkedIn. I blog through the Rouse Photography Group website, as well as the DC corporate headshots website. And where else? I mean, you can.
How about Twitter?
Oh, definitely on Twitter. Twitter, you'll find me at, I think it's just DC Headshots. I have to look and see.
Yeah, I think you're at DC Corporate Headshots, and then you're at Delane Rouse, aren't you?
Yeah, I do have the Delane Rouse, which is my personal account.
All right.
So.
Well, we'll make sure that people can find you on all those different spots, put those okay. up on the blog. And Delane, it has been an absolute pleasure speaking with you today, sir. Thank you very much for taking your time out of your day.
Thank you, John. I appreciate it.
So we hope to see everybody back in the next episode of Social Echoes, the True Voice Media podcast. Until then, take it easy.